Wednesday, April 10, 2024. You are listening to the Daily Dose Sports Podcast, and I am your host, Clint Daly, coming to you from the Mile High City here in Denver, Colorado, and we are back for another week of talking sports with a dose of common sense. Hey, happy Wednesday to you. Hope your week is off to a good start. You are now already halfway to another weekend, and I hope that you, your family, your friends, everyone in your world is staying strong and you're staying healthy right now. And I hope that you are having a solid start to the week and that you survived that solar eclipse on Monday, right? Is that something you planned your day around? I gotta ask. You know, it wasn't like that long ago that an earthquake up on the East Coast, where they rarely get earthquakes, followed by a solar eclipse, would have had people screaming that the gods must be angry and that a sacrifice might be needed. Fortunately, these days, we understand that these things happen so often. We know ahead of time when they're going to happen. And we don't have to make any crazy proclamations or throw anyone into a volcano or anything, right? We are so much smarter now than they used to be back then. Like, way smarter now. It used to be that everyone would be, you know, pulling their hair out and running around and acting crazy. Now, I mean, so we had an earthquake. So there was an eclipse not long after. But we're smarter now. We're a more intelligent species now. Now, make sure that you plug in your energy-free Tesla overnight. Oh, and do not tell me that you're still driving an internal combustion engine, or you will be publicly shamed, you environment hater. But like I said, we don't run around making sacrifices to the earth anymore. We're far, far smarter than that. Now, let's get to the most important business of the entire day today on The Dose. Yes, that's right. I am talking about the winner of our Daily Dose NCAA Tournament Bracket Challenge. Yes, we need to discuss who won the annual bracket challenge this year. And you know, for a change, I hate to say this, I was nowhere near the top of the rankings. In fact, I think I finished dead last. You know, I always at least compete in the bracket challenge, but wow, this year I was bad. I was dead last. Awful. You know, I always say here on The Dose, fill out your bracket in like 5 minutes. And I did that. I probably should have also added, do not fill out your bracket in 5 minutes after a few beverages. Hey, huge mistake on my part. I'll be better next time. But right now, let's get to the results of the Daily Dose Bracket Challenge. Finishing up at number 5, we have Chet's Picks, who finished with 1,020 points. Solid job, Chet. Next up, at number 4, we have I Swim in Pinkle with 1,050 points. You know, I Swim in Pinkle, I don't know who that is. They're always a strong contender. It seems like I Swim in Pinkle is right there at the top. Another nice showing here. They finish in 4th. Finishing in 3rd place, we have Lulu's Winning Bracket with 1,090 points. And you know, Lulu actually went into the title game with a nice lead, but she had Purdue winning it all. And of course, they came up a little bit short. But hey, excellent showing here for Lulu. Nice job. You take home 3rd place. In 2nd place, we have Manu de Great with 1,180 points. You know, Manu de Great actually led this challenge for a good portion of it, but then kind of went through a rough patch before rallying to finish strong. Nearly pulled off that comeback, but comes up just a little short. Manu de Great comes in 2nd place. However, in 1st place, with 1,250 points, and our winner of the 2024 Daily Dose Bracket Challenge, we have Billy O, a guy that knows his hoops very, very well. Hey, congrats to Billy O. We will be sending you a Daily Dose t-shirt. Just let us know what size and what color that you like, because of course you can pick the color that you want. Let's see. I could see Billy O going with maybe black or orange. He might go green. I don't know. Billy O could even go like Jayhawks blue or red. Couple different options there. You never know which direction that will go. But congrats to Billy O, and congrats to all of you that participated in the Daily Dose Bracket Challenge. It's always fun to do that every single year. Well done to everyone. Well, except for me. Hey, before we jump in today, just want to remind you, make sure you are stopping by DailyDoseSports.com every week, because we have new articles going up every week. You might have seen, talked a little bit about the biggest name in college basketball this year in our article this week, so you don't want to miss that. But we do also have links to the podcast. We have links to the YouTube videos, and yes, we have links to Daily Dose gear. Hey, maybe your bracket crashed and burned. I know mine did. Maybe you're in that same boat. That's okay. You can go over to DailyDoseSports.com and you can find a new t-shirt, a new sweatshirt, or a new hoodie. And when you go pick what you want to order, you get to order in whatever color that you want. So make sure you are stopping by DailyDoseSports.com every single week and checking on with what we have going up over there. Hey, today on the show, we are going to be recapping those national championship games in both the men's and the women's tournaments. And then we are going to be handing out some end-of-year college basketball awards to kind of finish out the year, put a nice big bow on the college basketball season as we say goodbye for another season. And then we do have a college basketball-flavored Daily Dose Top 5 for you. Want to make sure you stick around for that. But first, let's discuss the NCAA tournament and some breaking sports news. And where else can we start off this week but with the men's NCAA tournament, which concluded on Monday night with the UConn Huskies winning back-to-back titles by beating Purdue 75-60. You know, that game began, and I'm watching it, and it's tight, and Purdue big man Zach Edey was everywhere. He was scoring. He was blocking shots. He was getting rebounds. Zach Edey was dominant. But Connecticut had a plan. And you know, they kept looking to push pace in transition. They kept looking to play fast and make Edey work extra hard. And pretty soon, we saw Zach Edey start to tire out. So, with about 7 minutes left in the first half, Purdue coach Matt Painter pulls Edey out to give him a quick rest. And what did UConn head coach Dan Hurley do? He immediately put his own big man, Donovan Klingon, on the weak side of the block, ran it to the strong side, skipped the ball, fed it into him, and got an easy layup. Hey, that wasn't an accident. That was Dan Hurley knowing exactly how that would go and knowing exactly how he wanted to attack it. And you know, watching that game, don't get me wrong, Edey was still productive, but kind of felt like he never really got his wind fully back. It seemed like he was struggling a little bit. You know, the Huskies made him work so hard, he ended up not having the same explosion that he had earlier in the game. We even started to see some smaller UConn players getting into the paint and scoring. Edey finished the game with 37 points and 10 rebounds. A dominant night. But you know what? UConn was okay with that. And you know why? Because no one else from Purdue really did anything. Braden Smith had 12. That was it. No one else even had double digits. So UConn was like, hey, Edey, you can score 40. We don't care, because 40 isn't going to beat us. And so limit everyone else, let him get his, and we'll take our chances, and we'll probably be fine. We saw the UConn defense chase shooters off the three-point line. They forced them to hit some really tough contested shots, and Purdue just couldn't do it. Meanwhile, Connecticut had four players in double digits, and you could see as the game wore on, Purdue just didn't have the firepower to keep up. The Connecticut Huskies win 75-60 going away. It really wasn't that difficult down the stretch. Now, because we are in this stupid modern era, that we live in. We immediately have to hear all the talking hairdos in the sports world asking, is this Connecticut team the greatest team in the history of college basketball? Which is just so difficult to gauge. I'm not even going to try. Because is this team better than like North Carolina in 82 with Michael Jordan and James Worthy and Sam Perkins? I don't know. Or what about the UCLA teams with Kareem or even Bill Walton? What about the undefeated Indiana teams or those incredible Duke teams in the 90s? Again, I don't know. There's no way to judge that realistically. I do know this. I do know this Connecticut team would be very young in comparison to those teams. So I don't know that they would really match up all that well. But I will give Connecticut this. Remember, they won it all last year. Then they lost many of their key players. And Dan Hurley rebuilt that thing, ran it back, and looked even more dominant. That, to me, is the most impressive aspect of the Connecticut Huskies this year. Hey, Dan Hurley is playing chess. And with the way he has things rolling, I know they're going to lose a bunch of people this offseason. How could they not? And yet, I have to think they're going to keep being a contender every single year because he absolutely has things rolling up there. Hey, all credit to the Connecticut Huskies. And you know what? Credit to the program that has been built there. Not the team, the program. Congrats, Connecticut. You are back-to-back champions. And right now, like I said, I can't really count them out for a three-peat. I wouldn't think it's very likely, but it is possible because of the strength of the program. Not the team, the program. There's a big difference. Of course, another huge story to break this week in college hoops, because this guy can't have the national championship overshadowing him, is that Kentucky head coach John Calipari has worked out a deal to swap SEC teams, and John Calipari is headed to Fayetteville, Arkansas to coach the Razorbacks. Of course, we know Calipari has been under pressure at Kentucky recently. He has been hearing a lot of criticism about how the Wildcats haven't been out of the first weekend of the NCAA tournament since clear back in 2019. They got upset by a 15 seed in St. Peter's a few years ago. They got beat by a 14 seed in Oakland this year. You know, following that first round loss this year to Oakland, there were a lot of people in Kentucky asking for Calipari's job. And athletic director Mitch Barnhart actually had to come out saying, no, 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 he's not going anywhere. He's staying here. Well, of course, Kentucky would have owed Calipari more than $33 million if they fired him. But the school doesn't owe him any money if another program hired him. Well, that is exactly what happened, as Calipari is set to replace Eric Musselman, who left for Southern Cal last week. Now, they say the key relationship for this deal all coming together was Calipari's long-standing ties to John H. Tyson, the chicken billionaire, who is a longtime Arkansas booster.
I convert your concessions to all chicken, no charge. Instead of hot dogs, chicken dogs. Chicken. Instead of pretzels, chicken twists. Instead of beer, alcoholic chicken.
I actually think that this move is a win for both schools in a way, because Kentucky was growing tired of the big recruits, but the lack of postseason success. And they save on that $33 million buyout because he left. Now, it will be fun to see who Kentucky goes and gets. And you know that Kentucky fans will be totally logical and totally realistic. They'll be hoping for like Billy Donovan or Rick Pitino, maybe Mike Krzyzewski, John Wooden, you know, somebody totally realistic. And then on the other side, you have Arkansas, who really hasn't been all that nationally relevant. Because they never are. They haven't been really, truly a household name since what? Bill Clinton was chasing interns around the Oval Office? I mean, this is a steal for Arkansas. Hey, Arkansas, I'm telling you this right now. Enjoy it. You can worry about vacating those games later. Don't worry about that. For right now, just enjoy the ride. Staying in college basketball, USC freshman guard Bronny James has announced that he will enter the 2024 NBA draft, but will maintain his college eligibility and will also enter the transfer portal. He announced that on Friday. Now, Bronny James had been expected to have a major impact on USC because, I mean, he was a McDonald's All-American in high school. But then you might remember he had that cardiac arrest episode back in July, and he had to have a procedure to treat, they say, a congenital heart defect. It sidelined him for 5 months, and as a result, he wasn't nearly that productive as a freshman at USC. Bronny James averaged 4.8 points, 2.8 rebounds, 2.1 assists. He was only playing 19 minutes a game. Now, remember, USC head coach Andy Enfield recently just took the SMU job. And USC has now hired Arkansas head coach Eric Musselman to take over. But, you know, after all that he went through, we've got to see what Bronny can even do, because he did have that heart procedure. He's going to have to be evaluated. He's going to have to be approved by an NBA fitness to play panel before he can even be eligible to participate in team workouts or the draft combine. He can't even be selected in the draft until he passes those workouts. Now, he can do interviews. He doesn't have to get medical clearance for those. But in the CBA, you have to have players that submit to a physical before they can do any of that stuff. Now, the pre-draft plan will be for Bronny to meet with teams that might be interested in him before the May 29th deadline to stay in the draft and find out if there is a possibility that someone would take him in the draft. Okay, so allow me to interpret what is happening here, because everyone knows Bronny James is not ready for the NBA yet, if ever. But see, it doesn't cost you anything to see what NBA scouts are thinking about. And more importantly, it allows his representation to gauge the interest in him. And we know why he's getting that interest. Because NBA teams are thinking, hey, if you draft Bronny, you just might get Daddy to come too. Now, is that going to lead anywhere this year? Probably not. But I mean, couldn't you totally see the Los Angeles Lakers not just drafting Bronny, but like trading up to draft Bronny just to keep Daddy LeBron happy? That would be so amazing. And it would be the most Lakers thing ever. Doing something they didn't have to do, as usual, running themselves like they are this broke mom and pop outfit, when in fact they're one of the richest organizations in the NBA and in the world. They just don't always act that way. Let's move over, though, to the women's NCAA tournament, where Iowa managed to scrape past Connecticut on Friday in the Final Four, which, of course, set up the national championship game that so many fans were rooting for. Because Iowa and Caitlin Clark would face undefeated and overall number one seed South Carolina. Okay, before we get to that game, let's talk briefly about the Iowa versus UConn Final Four game, where late in that game, we saw Connecticut get called for, let's just say, an iffy illegal offensive screen late in the game. Okay, so let me set this. With less than 10 seconds to play, UConn has the ball, and running a play, they were called for an illegal offensive screen, which turned the ball over, and Iowa scraped out the win by 2 points. Okay, let's ask it. Was this a fix to get Iowa and Caitlin Clark to advance to the championship game? Sorry, no. Was it an egregious foul? No. Did she lean a little on the foul? Yeah, I guess she did. Was there an advantage created? Yeah, I guess you could say there was. So I guess the refs were in the right place, I guess, to call that foul, I suppose. At that stage in the game, Do I want to see that call? No. Did I kind of wish they hadn't made that call so that we could see what Connecticut actually did on their final possession? Yeah, I did. I wanted to see how it played out. But did that illegal call cost UConn the game? No. Absolutely not. I thought all night in that game, Iowa was the more physical team. And usually, not always, but usually, when you are the most physical team without fouling every time, going to the basket, defending the paint, you win the game. Well, that's what Iowa did. So they won the game. Did they get a little bit of help at the end? Yeah, they did. But there's also nothing saying that UConn wouldn't have missed the shot or that Iowa wouldn't have went down and scored again. Who knows? I wish it would have come down to the players. I didn't really like the foul, but I get it. And it didn't cost UConn the game. Okay, let's move on to Sunday. We had Iowa and Caitlin Clark versus number one, South Carolina. And the game actually could not have started better for Iowa. The Hawkeyes jumped out to a quick 9-point lead. They were shooting the lights out early. Now, were the Gamecocks in trouble? No. Because one, South Carolina came out, and I don't know if it was nerves or what it was, but they looked like they were playing in mud. They were a step slow. They were chasing every pass. They were fouling shooters. They weren't playing good basketball. And that's a good basketball team. So, you know, even though they're shooting the lights out, one, I was eventually going to miss some shots. And of course they did. No one shoots 100%. And eventually some of those shots started to come out. And two, South Carolina had been missing a lot of little bunnies inside, especially by their post players. And you know, some of those are going to start to go in. And sure enough, they did. And even though at one point Iowa had a nice lead, in the second half, the game completely flipped. So Caitlin Clark had 18 points in the first quarter. Knocked a few shots down. But like I said, also got a few fouls called for her. She knocked down some shots at the free throw line. Well, after those 18 points in the first quarter, Caitlin Clark scored just 12 the rest of the game. Now, does that make her a garbage player? No. It means South Carolina came out and said, hey, you're going to have to earn the rest of these. And they gave her a hard time. South Carolina used their length. They bothered Clark. They forced her into contested lower percentage shots. And more importantly, like I said earlier, they stopped fouling. That was the biggest key in the first quarter. Quit fouling her. You gave her like 8 or 9 points to free throw line. That's not going to work. After that, the Gamecocks dominated. And they dominated inside. They outscored Iowa 48-32 in the paint. And the Gamecocks walked away with an easy 10-point victory. After the game, South Carolina head coach Don Staley had this to say. This is the most unlikely group ever to win it all. Okay, wait a second. Hold on. You were a preseason number one. You went 39-0. I know. Coaches have to have, you know, something created in their mind for motivation or whatever, but can we slow down on South Carolina being an underdog story? Like, you were stacked. You had like 12 McDonald's All-American players on your roster. Not exactly an underdog story. Slow down. You know what I really want to watch, though? And I think this is going to be fascinating to watch. I'm genuinely very interested to watch this. Here's the question I have. Was Caitlin Clark and the incredible 2024 NCAA women's season a sign of things to come? Or was it just a blip? And next year, the women's tournament is going to go back to, I don't know, battling The View for TV ratings. I don't know the answer. I think there are some good players returning next year, including UConn's Paige Becker and USC's Juju Watkins. There are some good, talented players. Can they grab America's attention again next year? Or was this year just kind of an aberration? I don't know. I'm genuinely interested to watch and find out. One final story to touch on this week, one that I think we probably should mention, and that is in the NFL. where the Houston Texans have made a trade for often disgruntled wide receiver Stephon Diggs. They did that last week. The Texans send a 2025 second round pick to Buffalo. The Bills get that second round pick, and they also get a fifth round pick. Houston gets two very late round picks, and they get Stephon Diggs. I mean, Diggs is a three-time captain with the Bills. And he just signed a four-year, $104 million contract extension. Well, the Bills are going to have to eat that dead money of $31 million on their roster this year. And then Houston has waived the rest of his contract. And after this next season, Stephon Diggs can be a free agent if he wants to. Interesting move here. So, I know that the narrative in the sports media world and throughout, you know, sports talk circles is that the Buffalo Bills are selling and they are now much, much worse. And the Houston Texans are buying and they are not just much better. Houston is now a legitimate Super Bowl contender because you've added some key pieces to this roster. Okay. Maybe. I mean, no doubt the Buffalo Bills are selling. They had to. They were completely out of money. They were over the cap before we even started, so they had to do that. But here's a question I have. Is losing a wide receiver that seems to be at least a little poisonous in the locker room? Oh, and also, by the way, also seems to drop clutch passes when you need him to make them. Is losing not that big of a loss? I'm not so sure. And on the other side of that, you now have the Houston Texans, a very young, very talented football team that is also going to have huge expectations on their head. Hey, don't go out and lose in the wild card round. Don't go out and get beat by Kansas City in the divisional round. I don't know if that's going to be good enough. Houston is now going to be looked at as a legit contender. It's very, very different when no one expects anything of you. It is very, very different to come out and have all the pressure on you. Hey, you're supposed to win this game this week against, I don't know, Indy or Tennessee or whoever. It's very, very different than, I don't know, they've been awful. What are they really going to do? Who cares if they win? That'd be great. And if they lose, who cares? It's a very, very different mindset. And I am very interested to see how Houston handles that. It might not be quite as easy as it is being made out to be. Okay, coming back. The college basketball season is now fully complete. And when we come back, we are going to be handing out some, you know, normal, standard college basketball awards like the Naismith Player of the Year and the Coach of the Year. But we're also going to be handing out some Daily Dose Awards. You know, like the Mark Madsen Nerd of the Year Award to the guy that will eventually be crushing in rec league somewhere. Hey, we will get to that and more when we get back. So the 2023-2024 college basketball season is now complete, and the UConn Huskies are your national champions. Hey, I know that the narrative was that there were no truly great teams this year. But I mean, think about this. UConn and Purdue combined to outscore their opponents by 223 points in the tournament this year prior to that title game on Monday night. Hey, that's the highest combined scoring margin by two finalists going into the title game ever in NCAA tournament history. That is dominance in a year that we didn't think we really had any. And you know, in a year that we thought all the top teams were totally vulnerable, for just the fifth time in tournament history, all of the number one and number two seeds advanced to the Sweet 16. Again, maybe this college basketball season was actually much better than what we thought it was. I know that college hoops has gone through this weird time of one and dones. And we don't always get to know the best players for 2 to 3 seasons like we used to. But I am starting to wonder if we are seeing the beginning of a new era in college basketball. because we're starting to get to know some of these players. And the NIL money just might be keeping them a little bit longer in the college game. It might actually be bringing college basketball back to the days when we did actually know some players. Now, honestly, we just need them to limit the transfer portal, because four teams in four seasons is idiotic, and everyone knows it. Do something about it. Okay, so let's hand out a few season end awards, and let's start with our Daily Dose Naismith Player of the Year. And we do have a few nominees for this award. North Carolina's RJ Davis led the Tar Heels to a 29-8 record. He averaged 21 points and 3.5 assists per game. He had a very solid year. He deserves a mention. So does Houston guard Jamal Shedd, who led the Cougars all the way to the Sweet 16, but then he rolled his ankle, and he had to sit on the bench and watch the Cougars lose to Duke. That had to be rough, but he had a phenomenal year. I would also mention one of the best scorers in the country in Tennessee guard Dalton Knecht. I mean, he was one of the hardest players to guard all year. Knecht averaged nearly 22 points a game. He was so good. He was physical. He could shoot it. He could hurt you so many ways. Okay, brief side note. Let me ask you this. I want you to look for this. NBA draft is coming, right? Find me one NBA draft profile for Dalton Knecht that doesn't compare him to a white guy. I guarantee they'll compare him to like Lauri Markkanen. Doesn't look like that at all. Or Rex Chapman or Mike Miller. Show me one profile, just one, that compares him to a black player. I'll wait. It won't happen. Okay, moving on. But I'm going to give our Daily Dose Naismith Player of the Year Award to the one guy that deserves it. And that is, of course, Purdue big man Zach Edey. Okay, I know that right now there are so many people saying how his game won't translate to the NBA. First, I disagree a little. He's a giant guy who's got some skills now. And two, who cares? Zach Edey had 20-plus points and 10-plus rebounds on 60% shooting in seven straight games leading up to the title game. That goes back to the Big Ten tournament. That is the longest streak by any D1 player in the last 25 years. The last guy that did it, Charles Barkley at Auburn. I don't care what Zach Edey does in the NBA. This isn't the NBA. This is college basketball. And Zach Edey was dominant in college basketball. So let me ask you this. Will RJ Davis's game translate? I don't know. Jamal Shedd's? No idea. Dalton Knecht's? I don't know. He'll get compared to a white player, but I don't know. I don't know about any of those guys, and I don't care either. But we only talk about Zach Edey, and if that will translate. I think that's unfair to that kid. We reach our Daily Dose Coach of the Year next, and once again, we have a few nominees. Because Matt Painter getting the Purdue Boilermakers to the championship game just 1 year after they had been eliminated by a number 16 seed? Yeah, that deserves a mention. Painter did a phenomenal job. How about North Carolina State head coach Kevin Keats, who was probably getting worried about his job just a few weeks ago, and then he took the Wolfpack all the way to the Final Four? But no, our Daily Dose Coach of the Year has to go to UConn head coach Dan Hurley. Hey, it is one thing to lead a team to the mountaintop, but it is quite another to rebuild that team after losing a number of key players and then doing it again. Hey, Dan Hurley has recruited kids that fit his team's style, and then his team just executed better than Purdue. They had a better game plan for Purdue. Dan Hurley is without a doubt our coach of the year. Okay, next up, we have our game of the year, and again, we have a few nominees. We can just go to the tournament. Number 14, Oakland, knocking off number 3, Kentucky, 80-76 in the opening round of the tournament. That was a really fun game to watch, especially when Oakland guard Jack Golke drops 10 three-pointers on the Wildcats. That was a fun game. Number 4, Alabama upsetting number 1, North Carolina, 89-87 in the Sweet 16. That was another really fun game. Up and down, back and forth. Really exciting game. Another good game. Number 1, Purdue beating number 2, Tennessee, 72-66 in the Elite 8. That was another game. You were on the edge of your seat until the very, very end. But I'm actually going to give our game of the year to a round of 64 game that honestly, if I'm being honest, it had poor defense and it had kind of an awful like AAU look to it. And yet, Colorado beating Florida 102-100 on the second day of the tournament, I mean, it had us all on the edge of our seats, didn't it? That was a really fun game. Colorado was up. Florida had to come back from a 13-point deficit in the final minutes. They tied the game only to lose on a buzzer beater, Colorado over Florida in the opening round of the tournament. Wins our best game of the year. Okay, so those are our standard college basketball awards, right? But we still have a few Daily Dose awards to hand out. And first up is our George Mason Surprise of the Year Award. Okay, so we all remember the incredible run that George Mason went on back in 2006. They went all the way to the Final Four. They upset some really big dogs, including Connecticut and North Carolina along the way. Okay, so who is our George Mason Award winner this year? Well, we could give it to number 14, Oakland, who did upset number 3, Kentucky in that first round game. We could also give it to number 13, Yale, for beating number 4, Auburn in the opening round. They surprised some people. And yet, this year, there's no question. Our George Mason Award has to go to number 11, North Carolina State. Remember, the Wolfpack were just 17-14 heading into the ACC tournament. This was a team hanging on a thin, thin strand of hope to even get into the tournament. And remember, against Virginia, who proved they didn't belong in the tournament, in that ACC tournament semifinal, North Carolina State needed a missed free throw and then a banked-in three-pointer to even stay alive. They win the ACC tournament. They go to the big dance. They needed overtime to beat Oakland to get to the Sweet 16. Then they beat number 2 Marquette. Then they beat number 4 Duke. And they go all the way to the Final Four. Big man DJ Burns was one of the players that everyone in the country was rooting for. The North Carolina State Wolfpack is without a doubt our Daily Dose George Mason Surprise of the Year. Okay, so we reach another award that we hand out every year, and we get to our Arizona Underachiever of the Year Award. And this award goes to the team that chokes early in the tournament after being a top seed. And once again, we could give this award to their namesake, because the Arizona Wildcats were again a number 2 seed in the West. And yes, they once again got upset by a lower seed. They were knocked out of the Sweet 16 by number 6 Creighton. We can easily give this to Arizona, who the award is named for, because let's face it, Arizona is always top ranked, and every year Arizona loses early to a team they shouldn't lose to. Oh, except for one year, clear back in the 90s. But I'm not going to give it to Arizona, because remember this. Arizona actually won 2 games this year before they went out. That isn't what they usually do. Usually, they lose right out of the gate, so I'm actually going to give them a pass and kind of an award here. Good job! Now, I could easily give this to the Auburn Tigers. They went 27-7. They went into the big dances in number 4, and then they were sent home in the first round by some nerds from Yale. Auburn's close. But no, our Arizona award has to go to number 3, Kentucky. Now, Kentucky has 3 kids that are being looked at as first round NBA draft picks this spring. And they lost to Oakland. Oakland doesn't have anybody. being looked at for the NBA. In fact, looking at this right now, we could consider renaming the Arizona Award the Calipari Award. I'm not going to do it, but I'm thinking about it. Not yet. Let's just say that. Let's put a pin in that. We'll circle back on that. I'm not going to do that just yet. Okay, next up, we have an award that is always kind of fun to predict, but it also makes me kind of sad. Because, like I said, when talking about Zach Edey earlier, the college game is just different. I don't care how all of it translates to the NBA. Enjoy it while you're watching it. But right now, we are going to hand out our Anderson Hunt Award, who we give to the player that absolutely lights up the tournament, but then we kind of know we're never going to hear from them again. And obviously, Oakland's Jack Golke is the first player that comes to mind, right? He hit 10 threes in the game, and he probably won't even get like a token tryout in the NBA. I also worry there's a chance we may never hear from NC State big man DJ Burns again, but I think that kid can play. I think he can find a spot in the NBA. Maybe it's not big, but he's a strong kid. Seems like he has a good head on his shoulders. I like Burns to at least get a little bit of play in the NBA. And no, I'm not going to give this award to Purdue big man Zach Edey. He's too big. He's too talented. Okay. I feel bad about this. I genuinely do. But I'm actually going to give this award to Alabama guard Mark Sears. Now, I am hoping he gets a chance to play in the NBA because he's undersized, but he is a great player. He was one of the best guards in the country in this tournament. Here's the problem. He's more of a shooting guard than a point guard. And he's not big enough to be a shooting guard in the NBA. So I would be happy for Mark Sears to prove me wrong, but I know, based on history, he will have a very tough road to make it. And for that reason alone, Mark Sears wins our Anderson Hunt Award. Next up is one of our favorite Daily Dose Awards every single year to hand out. And we've been giving it out for a while now. And that is our Mark Madsen Award. And we give it to the player that doesn't look like a player. He shouldn't be a player. Oh, but he can play. And someday, probably someday very soon, in fact, he's going to be joining like the local rec league and everybody's going to be like, who's this nerd? And then this guy's going to average like 40 points a game. He's not even going to break a sweat. He's drinking beers during timeouts. Past winners include Gonzaga's Drew Timmy. Oh yeah, he fits the bill. St. Peter's porn star in training Doug Eater and Loyola Chicago's Cameron Krutwig. Think of those guys. If you don't remember them, look them up because trust me, they are probably rec league sensations. They didn't look like they could play a bit, and they all dominated. So who will we give this award to this year? Well, I know they didn't make the tournament, even though, honestly, they should have. But Indiana State Sycamores big man Robbie Avila has to win this award. Avila averaged 18 points and 17 rebounds per game, while I might add wearing the big goggles and looking like a huge nerd. Avila led the Sycamores all the way to the NIT final where they lost a seat in the hall at the very end. But honestly, this dude, Mark Avila, he might have the greatest nicknames ever. Big white dude wearing goggles and people are calling him Kareem Abdul-Jabbar or Larry Bird or College Jokic, or Milk Chamberlain, or Steph Blurry. Robbie Avila doesn't look like a basketball player. Oh, and by the way, if you end up guarding him in rec ball here soon, yeah, he's torching you. He's dropping like 50 on you. Good luck. He wins our Mark Madsen Award. We finish off our 2023-2024 College Basketball Awards with another one of our favorite awards. And that is the Kardashian Award. What is the Kardashian Award, you might ask? Well, this obviously goes to the coach or player or team that gets a ton of media coverage. But at the end of the day, you find out there's really nothing in there. They're not really worth the hype. And looking at this year, I could easily give this to like Kansas, although they were banged up. Maybe Michigan State, they didn't do much. Even Michigan, who we thought might be better, they were dead last in the Big Ten and got their head coach fired because he was largely awful at his job. But I actually think I have to give this award to the Florida Atlantic Owls. Because remember, they went all the way to the Final Four a year ago. And then they returned most all of that team this season. Okay, so how did they do? Well, mostly, they weren't very good. FAU went 25-9 this year. Not bad. Although they had some bad losses on there. And then they got into the tournament as a number 8 seed. And then they were beaten soundly in the first round by number 9 Northwestern. They beat Florida Atlantic pretty easily without much drama at all. And for that, Florida Atlantic wins our Kardashian Award because you had a lot of hype, but you didn't have any really substance at all. You know, much like the actual Kardashians. Hey, I know we don't pay much attention to college basketball until the tournament. And this season, we all looked at it as, okay, this year, college hoops, there's no great teams. There's really no great players. But then we kind of found out in the tournament, that narrative wasn't correct. We actually did have some pretty good teams. We actually did have some pretty good players. And we did have, once again, a highly entertaining NCAA tournament. Hey, I know I say it all the time, but the NCAA tournament lives up to the hype every single year. And it did it again this year. Okay, coming back. There has been an interesting narrative floating around college basketball this season. We have heard about a player breaking all these records, and we've heard about games breaking television viewership records. But is any of it actually true? Hey, if it's coming from our American sports media, then you already know the answer, right? Of course it isn't. Now, as we do so many weeks here at the Daily Dose, we need to get over to our Daily Dose Top 5. Okay, so I know that there is currently a narrative based on NBA television viewership numbers that Americans, we just don't really like basketball. Our country doesn't get the sport. We're a bunch of redneck racists, and so we hate basketball, and we love football, and that's all we watch. And we hate to see the NBA have any success, so we refuse to watch it. And that, my friends, is an adorable sentiment. It's just that it doesn't have any basis in reality. And we have proof of that right here. Because both the men's and the women's tournaments turned in outstanding television viewership numbers in each of their postseason tournaments. Caitlin Clark and company delivered big time for ESPN. They had record audiences tuning in to watch their games. It wasn't just the women, though. The North Carolina State versus Duke Elite Eight game pulled over 15 million viewers. ESPN's telecast of UConn and Iowa had 14 million viewers. That, by the way, was the highest mark ever for a women's college basketball game. The men's national championship game brought in 24 million viewers this year. And the women's brought in 18.5 million viewers. Hey, those are outstanding numbers. And they show America does love basketball. They just don't like boring basketball with possibly dirty officiating. And yet, and I'm sorry to bring this up, but I have to. I'm sorry. When the numbers came out, when those viewership numbers actually were released, we didn't hear how great the numbers were. What we heard was the women actually got more views than the men. Here's what ESPN said, and I'm quoting. The Iowa versus LSU Elite Eight game had the highest television ratings ever for a college basketball game. And then that Final Four game against UConn broke that record. And then we had the national championship game on Sunday, which was even better. And hey, the narrative was out there in the sports media world. Women's college basketball crushed men's college basketball this year. And that is cute. But it's a little misleading. Yes, the women got great numbers. Yes, the women got the highest numbers for an ESPN college basketball game that they've ever had. But remember one thing. The big games in college basketball, in men's, the big games, they aren't played on ESPN. They are played on network TV. And those ratings are much higher. So this starts to feel like ESPN is telling this, saying over and over, this is the highest rated college basketball game, except that it has some caveats that they're not saying. So they're like, well, this is the highest rated game that was played on a Sunday when it was raining in like Rhode Island after an earthquake on the East Coast the day before an eclipse. That actually might be more accurate. And we'll prove that. Because today, our Daily Dose Top 5 is counting down the highest viewed college basketball games in history. Spoiler alert, none of them took place this past week. Let's go ahead and jump in. We start off at number 5. And we go back to 1983, where the Houston Cougars were the big favorite that year. Hey, they had that incredible Phi Slamma-Jamma crew. The Cougars had Akeem Olajuwon. They had Clyde Drexler, Michael Young, Benny Anders. They went 31-2 on the season. And in the tournament, Houston looked unbeatable. They beat Maryland. They beat Memphis. They beat Villanova. And then in the Final Four, they smoked a pretty good Louisville team. Meanwhile, North Carolina State, well, they were struggling. They'd only made the tournament by getting on a roll and winning the ACC tournament, kind of like they did this year. They were a number 6 seed. Well, in the opening round, they had to go to double overtime just to beat Pepperdine. That's not a good sign. But then that NC State team coached by Jimmy Valvano, they got rolling. They once again eked out a close game over UNLV. They blew out Utah. They scraped out a win over Virginia. And they beat Georgia in the Final Four. Well, that's fun. That's exciting. But they're not going to beat Houston. And in fact, Valvano even told the media before the game he was thinking about going four corners and just stalling. But that wasn't what he was telling his team. When the game started, the Wolfpack jumped out quick and they had an 8-point halftime lead. Of course, we knew the Houston run came. They came back and tied the game. And with seconds to play, NC State guard Derek Wittenberg launched a desperation shot that fell well short of the rim, but Wolfpack big man Lorenzo Charles dunked the ball as the buzzer sounded, and David had beaten Goliath 54-52. Well, the North Carolina State versus Houston game, it is without a doubt one of the most memorable games in NCAA tournament history. And you know why? It was a great game. It was really fun. We got an upset. Oh, and also, a ton of people watched it. Remember, women just pulled, 15, 16 million on their game? This game, at number 5, pulled an insane 32.14 million viewers. Yeah, that's a little bit more, right? Remember, most watched game ever? Well, on ESPN, watched by certain people. True, 32 million? Come on! And you know what's crazier? That game comes in today at number 5. We reach number 4. And we go back to 1994, where the Arkansas Razorbacks were rolling. Arkansas was a preseason number 3. They had gone to the Sweet 16 the previous year. But they were back, and they were better. Head coach Nolan Richardson, he had a squad that was more than capable of giving their opponents his patented 40 minutes of hell. Arkansas went 30-3, and they steamrolled opponents in the NCAA tournament by an average of 13 points per game. Okay, so Arkansas looks like the big dog. Who would they see in the championship game? A very talented, very experienced Duke Blue Devil squad that had seniors by the name of Antonio Lang and Grant Hill. So Arkansas was a slight favorite in the game, but hey, this is must-see TV. I mean, Nolan Richardson versus Coach K? Duke, who we know is a big dog, versus Arkansas, who actually was the big dog? Yeah, you had to watch, and people did. 32.73 million people watched, to be more specific. And late in the game, thanks to Scotty Thurman's high-arching three-point shot with less than a minute to play, the Razorbacks beat Duke 76-72. The 94 Duke versus Arkansas game was another great one, but it comes in today at number four. So we reach number three. And you're going to notice something on this list today. When there are compelling players to watch and compelling teams to watch, people tune in. Which also makes me wonder about the current state of the NBA. But never mind that. We go back to 1993 for this entry, where we had the North Carolina Tar Heels, who were solid, but they didn't have any really big name players. And then we had a team that was getting all of the hype, because the Michigan Wolverines had the Fab Five, who were freshmen, but were now sophomores. And Chris Webber, Jalen Rose, Juwan Howard, Jimmy King, and Ray Jackson were back after going to the finals the previous year, but losing to Duke. Well, now in 93, they were going to get it right. Right? Well, except, of course, that Dean Smith completely outcoached Steve Fisher, and Donald Williams and Eric Montross beat the Fab Five, and of course, Chris Webber took a timeout that he didn't have at the end of the game and was assessed a technical foul, and it gave Dean Smith his second national championship game. But the 1993 title game between North Carolina and Michigan was a memorable one, and it pulled 32.94 million viewers. That makes it in on our list today at number three. So we arrive at number two. And we actually go back just 1 year, because once again, you have the Michigan Wolverines and their Fab Five as true freshmen. Well, the Wolverines had shocked everyone by taking over in Michigan from the upperclassmen on their own team, and they rolled all the way to the title game. Now, back in 92, and I remember this well, you were either a fan of the black shoes and the black socks and the baggy shorts and the trash talk, or you probably liked Duke. There was kind of nothing in between. Well, Michigan would face Duke in the title game, and Michigan had a chance to shock the world. They could beat the Blue Devils. Remember, this was a good Duke team. They had Christian Laettner and Bobby Hurley and Grant Hill. Duke was really, really good. And you know what? They had experience. They were veterans. And the freshmen from Michigan, they honestly didn't know what they were in for. Duke pummeled Michigan by 20, 71 to 51, but people tuned in. You either loved Michigan and you were cheering for them and you wanted them to win, or you hated them and you wanted to see them get beat. But either way, you watched. And the 1992 Duke versus Michigan title game pulled in 34.31 million TV viewers. Yeah, those are huge numbers. Those are getting up in Super Bowl territory. But today it comes in on our list at number two. So we arrive at the number one most watched college basketball game in terms of TV viewers. And we go back to where college basketball truly got popular. We go back to where it started. I'll be honest, it's where it started for me as a really little kid. Don't get me wrong. Some people watch college basketball every year, but it was honestly, it was more of a niche thing at that time. It wasn't like it is now, where everyone watches and everyone fills out a bracket. That wasn't the case back then. But it all changed back in 1979 when a very talented Michigan State team went to the title game with a flashy 6'9 point guard named Irvin Magic Johnson. Hey, and they said it then. 6'9? What's he doing being a guard? Go to the post! But Magic could do all the things that smaller point guards did. Oh, and by the way, he was also 6'9". Well, in the championship game, Michigan State would face a gangly, mop-headed kid from Indiana that had led the Indiana State Sycamores to a 33-0 record. Hey, this title game had it all. You had two big-name players. You had two spectacular players that would end up, we didn't know it at the time, but would end up being the face of the NBA for years. And you had the big dog in Michigan State against the little school in Indiana State. This game had everything. And people watched. Michigan State would beat Indiana State 75-64 behind 24 points from Magic. And it is estimated, because remember, this is back before we had truly accurate readings on television viewers, but it is estimated that of all of the television sets in America that were turned on, one quarter of them were watching this game. The 1979 Michigan State versus Indiana State championship game is the most watched game in college basketball history. They estimate on the conservative side that the game had around 35.11 million viewers, but they say that number could be actually close to 40 million viewers. Hey, I'm not trying to dog the women's tournament. Huge props to the women's tournament this year. It was a highly entertaining tournament at times. It had some drama. And once again, like some of the games on our list today, it had some compelling characters like Caitlin Clark and Angel Reese and Paige Beckers and South Carolina and Juju Watkins. But here is my warning to women's basketball and the people who are shilling for it. Stop trying to tell us that it got more views than men's games. Because you know what? At the end of the day, it's intellectually dishonest. And it makes you look silly. And it also pokes holes in the women's game. Just be honest. Show some integrity and stop saying stupid things. Again, enjoy what we have here. We saw history this year. You don't have to compare it to anything. You could just enjoy it. Hey, next week on the Daily Dose, of course, college basketball is over. We don't have football quite yet, although the NFL draft is coming and we may start bracing up for that a little bit. But do you realize that the NBA and Stanley Cup playoffs are nearly upon us? We have to start getting ready for those. Plus, you know, we will keep you up on all the top stories in the world of sports. So be sure you tune into the Daily Dose and be sure you let a friend know to do the same. Hey, I want to say thank you to each and every one of you for listening to the Daily Dose every week. Thank you for the emails. Thank you for the texts. Thank you for the tweets. Thank you for going over to DailyDoseSports.com and checking out the new things going up there every week. But more than anything, thank you for sharing the show, for sharing the videos, for sharing the articles with someone that you know. We absolutely love it when you do that. Have to say thank you to JSP. Could not do any of this without you. I will see you all next Wednesday. Have a great week, everybody.
I convert your concessions to all chicken, no charge. Instead of hot dogs, chicken dogs. Instead of pretzels, chicken twists. Instead of beer, alcoholic chicken.